Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. You may have heard tomorrow changes begin for Michigan's auto insurance market, changes that stand to affect every driver, and perhaps even more critically, people who were seriously injured in collisions, and their caregivers. Some care-providing companies are even saying that they're going to have to close up shop, leaving families in the lurch. Here to explain is Tom Judd. He's president of the Michigan Brain Injury Provider Council. Tom, welcome to Stateside.
I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show. Thanks so much.
The changes, when they were proposed, their authors say that they intended them to reform auto insurance in a way that would bring rates down and help customers. Can you remind us briefly what the changes are?
Sure, certainly. So in 2019, there was sweeping reform of our auto insurance system. And among those changes were personal injury protection choice. So no longer are drivers mandated to choose unlimited lifetime coverage. There's now different monetary cap levels. And that went into effect last July, 2020. Then there's other stipulations that look to bring down costs in the system. Utilization review, in which insurance companies now have a process to challenge, you know, medical treatment through a systematic process. You have fraud authority. So DIFS has, Department of Insurance and Financial Services has more teeth in terms of what they can do to investigate fraud in the system. Assigned claims cap. So, you know, that now has a threshold of $250,000. So there's all a host of aspects of that reform law that intended to bring down costs in the system and thus lead to premium reductions. Also in that bill was a medical fee schedule. And the base of that formula was to set rates for reimbursement for auto insurance claims at 200% of Medicare.
That sounds on the surface like it might be reasonable, but what do you see the consequences being for patients and caregivers?
Sure. So that 200% of Medicare that I spoke of only applies to services that have payable Medicare codes. Okay. If there's a service being provided that does not have a payable Medicare code, the default goes to a across-the-board 55% reimbursement cap for services that don't have that payable Medicare code. For hospitals, that's not a big deal. But for post-acute providers, those that provide short-term and long-term rehabilitation and care for catastrophically injured patients, that's most of our services. And we're talking about residential, specialized residential programs in a setting like an adult foster care home. We're talking about supported living in the community. And we're talking about in-home attendant care, where a person can maintain residence in their own home, but might require up to 24/7 supervision given their medical needs, cognitive challenges, behavioral needs. So all of these services that I just spoke of, not to mention a host of others such as vocational rehabilitation, driving rehabilitation, transportation, case management, all of these services as of tomorrow are going to be reimbursed no more than 55% of what they were being reimbursed in January 1, 2019.
So where do things stand right now, Wednesday, as we're having this conversation Wednesday afternoon in the legislature?
To this point, the legislature has passed on three viable long-term solutions. Three separate bills were introduced that gave different avenues to fix this very narrow part of the law, that 55% reimbursement cap, and put together a reasonable substitution. They have passed on all of those long-term solutions and are now debating a kind of, they're calling it a stopgap program, a budgeted program of $10 million where providers can seek assistance if they can demonstrate a systemic deficit because of the 55% reimbursement cap, and they can seek assistance through that program.
Right.
But there's a host of problems with that program as well. But right now that's in the Senate and they're most likely taking it up today. And so that's where we're at as of today.
Well, I gather you're saying that the stopgap money approved will not be enough to keep businesses afloat?
It won't be enough. It's not nearly enough of the kind of gap in funding we're talking about. The gap in funding we're talking about is about $350 million a year. for those that are in the catastrophic claims fund, receiving funds through that. So the money's not enough. And the process is going to take an exorbitant amount of time. Providers aren't even going to be able to see any of this financial assistance until, you know, December into January because of the process that it takes to apply for this fund. So that's another 6 months of providers just, you know, working at a 45% reimbursement cut. And they're going to try and make payroll and sustain their operations for 6 months, and it's not sustainable. And so a lot of providers are not going to even make it to that point. So it's just, you know, I hate to say it, $10 million sounds like a lot to the public, I'm sure, but it is too little, and it's going to be too late.
Tom, what is the governor saying about all of this?
The governor throughout this process has said that she welcomes a narrow fix, but it's up to the legislature to get it to her desk. You know, she hasn't taken a strong stance in terms of really stressing to the legislature the dire need that is out there for this, unfortunately. And, you know, it sounds like from what she's made, you know, with some public comments, that she would be supportive of this stopgap bill, if you will.
Right.
Ignoring the pitfalls of the short-term ramifications and ignoring the fact that it does not lead to a long-term solution.
How do you explain why it is that the services weren't grandfathered for those who are already in the system? I mean, like you say, the amount of money that they're in disagreement about doesn't sound like that much. How do you explain why that didn't happen?
I'm not sure. I really don't have an answer for that. I mean, we know that there's $23 billion in the catastrophic fund sitting there. So I don't know why we're taking $10 million of taxpayer dollars to subsidize that fund. It just doesn't make much sense on a number of levels.
Are we talking about a principle of sort of trying to turn the system around and that maybe this would be the foundational piece of that?
That's what it seems like. I guess the next logical question is, what kind of system do these legislators want? They want a system where patients don't get quality specialized care? Do they want a system where 20-year-olds who are injured go to a nursing home and wait out the rest of their lives? Do they want a system where families can't provide care inside their homes? Do they want a system where people who could be living in their homes and relatively independent from government assistance are forced onto Medicaid and living in the nursing homes for the rest of their life and instead of in their own home receiving care that they need?
Well, how would you define the terms then? What would you say that caregivers and advocates like yourself do want to see happen for changes with the law?
So we have focused our advocacy only on this very small, narrow part of the law. You know, we're not arguing against PIP choice, which has its own, you know, long-term ramifications of people not having lifetime care. We're not arguing against that. We're not advocating against that. We're advocating against a government-mandated 55% reimbursement cap across the board, not considering individual companies and the margins they kind of work on. So what we've been advocating for is a long-term solution that really meets the intent of the law, which was 200% of Medicare, a fee schedule that brings consistency and reliability. Across the board, reimbursement cap does none of those things. So we have supported and proposed reasonable fee schedules that meet the intent of the law, provide a long-term solution, bring stability and consistency to the system, while still allowing providers to remain in business and provide the services that thousands of patients need across the state.
Do you know if any care providers have already closed down in anticipation of what it appears is about to happen?
Yep, absolutely. There's about 20 companies that I've been made aware of, and that's just me being made aware of them because of my position within our association. There might be companies across the state that I'm not aware of because maybe they're not part of our association, but you know, about 20 companies that have provided their patients with notices of discharge. Some of them are closing their doors, and some of them just can't simply provide services to patients with auto insurance funding because of the reimbursement level. And that's impacting up to 680 patients and impacting 1,500 jobs. And these jobs we're talking about are our healthcare heroes. They're direct care workers who braved the pandemic, provided invaluable services and now are being forced to find other work and lose their job because of this reimbursement cap. So that's happening now.
Yeah. Tom, the architecture of changes that got us to this situation is a little bit complicated. And I know that your members are caregivers. They're not insurance providers. But I just want to note that most of Michigan's drivers are still choosing the unlimited coverage that's the default option under the new rules. And a lot of people have just been looking at the bottom line on their bills, and they've been going with the cheapest possible option. And the argument from the industry is that what we've got here is just not a long-term viable solution. Where's the middle ground here?
There really is no middle ground. Either we have that system or we don't. This 55% reimbursement cap makes those lifetime benefits much less valuable and much less meaningful because there's going to be significantly less options for care. They couldn't legislate out the lifetime care option because we have seen time and time again that people want that benefit. And we're going to continue to see it as people continue to choose that benefit. So instead of legislating it out, they've created a system in which they have made that lifetime benefit pretty much irrelevant because the long-term care for catastrophically injured patients simply isn't going to be there.
Tom Judd is president of the Michigan Brain Injury Provider Council. Tom, thank you for talking with us.
I appreciate the opportunity.